At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Before Donna Adelson, what happened? How did we get here? That's the story we are going to be talking about today. Because there was a world before Donna Adelson got involved in all of this. At least a world that she would like most of us to forget. I mean, because behind the scenes, she was playing her part, but what part were the others playing? The people she was steering from behind the curtain. That's what we're about to get into today. It started with silence, a silence so deep, so wrong, that it felt like the world itself held its breath. Tallahassee, July 18th, 2014. Dan Markell pulls into his garage after dropping off his two boys at daycare. He never makes it out. Two bullets to the head, precision. No struggle, no theft, just a cold, calculated execution. The sound of those gunshots didn't echo along, but the ripples they made, they reached all the way to South Florida. To a family that thought money could rewrite fate. The Adelsons. The thing about evil is that it doesn't always start with monsters. Sometimes it starts with ordinary people making selfish choices in quiet rooms. And sometimes those choices, they grow teeth. Dan Markell's murder didn't come out of nowhere. It was the final punctuation mark in a bitter, years-long custody war. His ex-wife, Wendy Adelson, wanted to move the kids to Miami. Dan said no. The courts agreed with him. And somewhere in that web of resentment, someone decided if Dan Markell wouldn't give up control, he had to go. But this story, this long, tangled story, didn't begin with Charlie's smirk or Donna's letters. It began with a small-time criminal, or criminals. No one remembers the first cracks, the first people who broke the code of silence because they didn't have the money or the lawyers or the arrogance to believe they were untouchable. Those early flips are where the truth began. When people finally made their first arrest, or when police finally made their first arrest, it wasn't the family that fell. It was the hired help, the disposable ones. The ones that Donna thought, well, if they go, they're not going to talk. They're not going to challenge the Adelsons. They're not going to do it. Yeah. Well, they did. They sang the praises of Donna and Charlie. And this is how we got here. Let's talk about them. Luis Rivera and Siegfriedo Garcia, two men with rap sheets longer than their patience. Two friends whose loyalty could be measured in cash. Garcia was a trigger man. Rivera was a driver. And when the heat closed in, Rivera was the first to feel the burn. Luis Rivera wasn't a man with much to lose. He was a Latin Kings gang member who'd been around the block enough times to know that silence doesn't make you a martyr. It just makes you dead. So when the deal came, he took it. He sat in front of prosecutors. He said the words that cracked the case wide open. He drove the Prius, he supplied the gun, he watched his friend pull the trigger, and he didn't even pretend to know who Dan Markell was. He was doing a job. That's it. But Rivera gave them something far more valuable than confession. He gave them a name. Catherine McBanawa. It was a name that pulled the case out of the streets and into the suburbs, because Catherine wasn't a gangster. She was the bridge, the woman who connected the killers to the people who paid for it. She'd been romantically involved with Garcia for years. He was the father of her children. But she was also seeing Charlie Adelson. Moving on up, Wendy's brother. At the same time, a dentist, a rich, cocky man, used to control. Charlie lived in a world of luxury cars and Botox smiles. What a gem. Catherine came from a world. You see what I did there? Catherine came from a world where cash ruled and bills piled up. She was the perfect middlewoman, desperate enough to take the risk, close enough to make it work. When Rivera flipped, Catherine's double life started to unravel. She tried to hold the line, told investigators she had no idea what they were talking about, that she was being framed, that her relationships with Charlie, with Garcia, were personal, not criminal. But investigators had seen this dance before, and this time, they had something she didn't. Rivera's testimony, phone records, and a paper trail that did not lie. Between July of 2014 and the months after, the phones told their own story. Call after call between Catherine and Charlie, spikes of activity right around the murder, and again when the heat started rising. There were money transfers disguised as help, a series of $4,000 checks that went from Charlie's dental practice to Catherine's account, and a hidden web of coded conversations about rent, work, and the TV, phrases that prosecutors would later argue meant one thing, the payment for murder. And then came the surveillance, a hidden microphone in a South Florida restaurant called Dolce Vita. Captured Charlie and Catherine in a conversation that would later become infamous. They didn't know they were being recorded. Charlie, jittery, paranoid, spoke about the paper, a note left at his mother Donna's house by someone claiming to know about the hit. He talked about paying off the problem, about how this could blow everything up. The way they spoke, half-coded, half-panic, confirmed everything investigators suspected. The bridge was real, the money was real, the conspiracy was real. But still, at that moment, they didn't have enough to charge Charlie. Not yet. The state had the killers, they had the middlewoman. But they were still staring up the glass ceiling of wealth and influence that shielded the family behind it. So they waited. They built. And they squeezed Catherine. For years, she refused to flip, even as Rivera's testimony painted her as the fixer, even as Garcia went down swinging, maintaining that he was innocent, even as prosecutors laid out every transcription, every lie, every taped conversation, Catherine stood firm. She smiled in court. She wore the kind of calm that makes you wonder if it's courage or delusion or extreme narcissism. But time wears everyone down, especially when your co-defendant has already put the murder weapon in your lap. When your own freedom started to evaporate, Catherine finally broke, and she started to talk. Not a full confession, not at first, but just enough to confirm what the prosecution already knew. That the money came from Charlie. That Charlie often consulted his mother before acting. That the cash was washed, literally cleaned, in a washing machine. And by the way, that's not how you launder money if you're playing along at home going, isn't that how you launder money? No, it is not how you launder money. There's no laundromat involved in the process, or washer or dryer for that matter, at home. And the family's conversations were about taking care of the problem that had ruined their lives. Dan Markell. Ruined their lives, ruined their control. He wants to be a father to his children. What could possibly, why? Why is he such an evil man? He doesn't want us to take the children and move hundreds of miles away. Oh, horrible. Oh! That's literally how the Adelsons thought. Because they couldn't get their way, because they couldn't take a father's children hundreds of miles away, so grandma could be happy and Wendy could be comfortable and still breastfeed daily from Donna, in my opinion, allegedly, maybe. I don't think Wendy was literally breastfeeding from Donna at this age. But you know what? Anything's possible with his family, it feels like, in my opinion. It's chocolate milk day. I had to go there. Donna Adelson wasn't some bystander in the story. She was the matriarch, the puppeteer. Behind her gentle smile and expensive jewelry was the woman who could rationalize anything. When you believe your family is under siege, morality becomes a luxury, and the Adelsons, in their world of status and image, couldn't stand the stain of losing control, not to an ex-son-in-law, not in a court order, not to anyone. By the time investigators pieced this together, years had passed, the killers were in custody, Catherine was cornered, and the walls around the Adelsons were closing in. But this, right here, this is where we stop, because this is the part of the story that most people forget. Before Charlie was arrested, before Donna became a headline, before Wendy's name became internet debate fodder, this was the quiet part of the storm. You're listening to The Quiet Storm on Smooth 104.5. Here's the latest from Sade. Cherish the day. Okay. The time when everything looked normal on the surface, but beneath it, the truth was already moving. Rivera sat in his cell, trading years of his life for the promise of leniency. Catherine stared down her reflection in an interrogation room mirror, realizing the people she protected were never going to protect her, and the Adelsons, they went on with their lives. Dinner parties, dentistry. Dentistry dinner parties. We have people over for dinner. You serve them a delicious meal, and then Charlie would come out, and Harvey would come out, and then they'd put dentures in. It was really kind of amazing, but they do that sort of shit in the villages all the time. Dentistry dinner parties. Look them up. I'm completely making that shit up. But I just gave some retired dentist ideas in the villages, didn't I? Huh? Huh? I'll take my cut. Why? Those veneers are lovely. How did you get them? Well, first, we had a lovely filet mignon dinner over at Charlie's. And after that, I opened wide and they got the drills out and they sanded the teeth down a little bit. Donna watched and then they put the veneers in. It was a lovely, lovely time. You have to go to Charlie's. It's delicious. Those filets. I tell you, I was gumming them. I was gumming them, and then they put the veneers in and showed, oh, I could just go right. Okay. Dentistry dinner parties. Choose that page in your own adventure, bitch. Trips to the gym, family photos, all built on borrowed time. Because once the first person flips, the story has already started to rot from the inside. Rivera's plea was called a necessary evil by prosecutors. They weren't wrong. Sometimes justice starts with a devil's bargain. Sometimes the only way to reach the powerful is to listen to the damned. And that's exactly what happened here. One man trying to save himself pulled on a single thread. And behind that thread was an entire family empire waiting to unravel. The beauty and the horror of this case is that every layer of deceit was peeled away, not by brilliance, but by failure. The killers weren't geniuses. The planners weren't invisible. They all made the same mistake. They thought their silence was stronger than their fear. It never is. Because fear always wins. Fear of dying in prison, fear of losing your kids, fear of being forgotten. That's the worst one to a narcissist. That's what broke them. That's what gave us the truth. And it's what makes this story haunting, because it's not just about one murder. It's about how the illusion of control destroys everyone who believes in it. For the Adelsons, control was oxygen. They micromanaged everything from Wendy's love life to her court filings, from her furniture to her future. They saw Dan Markell not as a man, but as an obstacle, something to be managed like an overdue bill. But control is fragile. And when you build your world on manipulation, it only takes one weak link to send it all crashing down. Rivera was the first crack. McBonough was the second, and by the time prosecutors finished following the money, the cracks had become a canyon. It took years for the public to see it, years for the headlines to finally catch up to the truth that had already been sitting in the case files since 2016. But that's how justice works sometimes. Painfully slow, methodical, and merciless when it finally arrives. So this is where we leave it. In that tense, suspended moment, before Charlie's downfall, before the handcuffs, before the smirk, when the air was thick with inevitability, when Donna still believed she'd outrun the storm, when Catherine Silence was hanging by a thread, and when Luis Rivera, somewhere in his cell, probably didn't even realize he had already rewritten Florida's history. This was a genesis of collapse, the moment before the world saw the truth, when the first domino had already fallen and the rest were trembling. Because justice doesn't always announce itself. Sometimes it just whispers. Sometimes it hides in the plea deal of a gangster and the nervous phone call of a middlewoman. And sometimes it just waits quietly, patiently, for the powerful to believe they've gotten away with it. Narcissism always wins, and it takes down anyone who practices it. That's the haunting truth of the Adelson story. Before the headlines, before the trials, before the names became symbols, this is how we got here. A deal made in the shadows, a bridge built on blood, and a family that thought they could bury their secrets, only to learn that the dead don't stay buried forever. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. Press subscribe right now if you would, please. Wherever you're listening, wherever you're watching, whatever platform, hit the subscribe button, please, so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and all of the cases that we continue to follow for you right here. And there's a lot. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi on any platform, and you will find us. Podcast, YouTube, whatever. We're there. Social media, you'll find us. And join us, shall you? Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now. And don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.